Nippur. Nippur is a very interesting city-state. It happens to be command central for the Earth colony commander, who is Enlil. This is Enlil's city, and where Enlil goes, so goes the direction to everyone else. And what Enlil says is final. There's no negotiating with Enlil. So, let's start with the first thing that comes up on the slideshow. Hit refresh, put your cursor on the first slide that comes up. It's a map, and you'll see Mesopotamia and then in Sumer. In Sumer, there is a few cities there, a few city-states, actually, right in the middle between the rivers, Euphrates and Tigris, that dumps into the Persian Gulf. By the way, there's an ancient river on either side of those two, and therefore the four rivers that dump into the Persian Gulf and the land between the rivers where the Eden is. Now look at Nippur. Nippur is smack dab in the middle of this fertile plain between the rivers, and it happens to be the headquarters for the Anunnaki who came down and colonized the earth. That's their headquarters. And in those city-states there, that's different homes for each one of these king descendants, royal descendants of the king who came down. They're going to get their ziggurat, they're going to get their city-state, some type of realm of responsibility and all the work they got to do. And all of this will be centered from Nippur. So imagine if they come down, they discover that what they're looking for is here, which is mainly gold. Lots of damage to their planet trying to make a one world order. Try to make one here and see if you don't have a few wars. So that's what they went through. They've got some damage and they need the gold. They have searched high and low for gold, and it seems it only happens to be found on the asteroid belt and on Earth. Now, Earth was inside the Forbidden Zone. The Forbidden Zone, meaning the asteroid belt, and what's inside it. Because it was too dangerous to fly through the asteroid belt, it was forbidden for the Anunnaki to try it. Well, one of them tried it out of desperation, and he lands right there in the Persian Gulf. And he looks around, sees there's fruit on trees, the air is good, there's sweet water, animals they can feast on, grass is good, everything is good. This planet, they call it the sweet spot. This planet is right in the sweet spot, the perfect distance from the star, and the star being the sun. And we are in, and Mars could be as well, we are in the area where there would be atmosphere, there'd be livable temperatures, there would be life and water, and there's your DNA and there's your life. So they have calculated now that there's somewhere near a billion planets that are right in the sweet spot of this and that, and this, a billion different stars, suns. So out of a billion suns, they calculate there are a billion sweet spots. We are one of those. Mars at one time was as well. So anyway, they came down, they see there's gold, and there's gold in the rivers, there's gold on the ground, depending on what nation you're looking at. They pick up what's easy, but they still got to mine it. So they discovered quickly South Africa has an abundance of gold. So they start mining in South Africa. They send about 300 down to South Africa into the mines. Okay? It's dark. It's damp. It's ugly. All right. And dusty. And heavy loads. They've got about 300 between the rivers, headquarters in Nipper. So now you're talking about 300 within the Garden of Eden. Just follow me. So there's 300 down south digging gold. There's 300 in the civilization, the housing area, the command center for them on Earth. And so they establish their houses, which are ziggurats, about every 50 miles, which you'll see in other maps here. But this map is giving you pretty much the very early cities, okay, that were established. You can add Larsa to that group. And it's all somewhere in here. I can't recall it right quick where you're going to see all that. But anyway, what I'm showing you is the land between the rivers where the fertile valley is. And of that land, Nipper is the focus. Everything comes from Nipper. And everything on Earth started in Mesopotamia, Sumer. Sumer is the first civilization in Mesopotamia. Man went... If you're an evolution believer, man went from Neanderthal, Homo erectus, into Homo sapien pretty much overnight, as a historical view, in the blink of an eye. Man is now living in cities with schools and medicine and all kinds of things. They manufacture there. They smelt gold there. I mean, what do you do in your city? That's what they're doing there. And as though that civilization, their focal point on Earth, as they continue to take gold, from South Africa, they ship it on up to Nipper and this area right in there. And they smelt those rocks that have gold in them and bring it down into a pure gold form, which is much lighter in weight than trying to blast off with junk. You want to get the pure form. It's smelted there by a god named Gibel. Who does the metallurgy for the gods. Anyway, he's the god of the kilns. Metal. Wait a minute, there's no metal in ancient Sumer. Anyway, here we are in Nipper, which is Enlil's home. Now, there are earthlings down there that settled around his ziggurat home, but he's not a fan of the earthling. He considers them too noisy. So he doesn't want a whole bunch of them around him. And all of them do not go directly to the earthling, who is primitive. They have what the Bible would call, and let's see if it's on this page somewhere. No. They have what is known as sex. When the sons of God came down, had sex with the daughters of men, we're talking about the Nephilim, were now created because they had children. And these children became the heroes of old, men of renown. Well, what we're talking about there are the first kings on earth who were a combination of their DNA and their clock as they age, and the earthling DNA, because they had sex with the daughters of man, and their clock on Earth. Okay? Their size, their clock, whatever earthlings have, that's in the DNA. Same with the Anunnaki. So they have this mixed breed. Doesn't much please Enlil, but they come up with this mixed breed, and this mixed breed ends up being the perfect go-between. So pick a city. You've got the ziggurat, for instance, in Sherapak or any of them. You've got the ziggurat where the god or goddess lives. And below, down way below, is the city. Now, the only person that's going through that ziggurat is the king. No one else is going up them steps and getting into the ziggurat to talk to God. Unless you're another mixed breed that it has been appointed as the high priest of this temple, this ziggurat, which basically means he's the butler to the god who lives there. He's also the one who continues the masses in being excited about the god and the upcoming ceremonies and parades and God blesses you with this and this and this, while the king is giving you the directives saying God wants us to do this. These are the laws of God. Over here is the other dimension of God. So what you're talking about are go-betweens appointed to positions of authority over earthlings. It's perfect for them, but still, Enlil doesn't like it. What are the earthlings here? They're here as, and they call them the black-headed. Earthlings are here basically as they're mining the gold down south. They can't get, as time goes by, they can't get any replacements. They can't convince Enlil for his group to come down there and trade so they can get out of the mines and come up into the sunshine in the cities. Enlil says no. These guys are stuck over and over and over in the mine. Would you like to be there? By the way, Rome and others always used slaves for their mining. Anyway, so they go on strike, and they literally move upon Enlil and his authority, showing up at his temple house in Nippur. That's a long way to travel to come to demonstrate outside his door. He's going, what the hell is going on? And when he finds out, he goes, ooh, we got a problem here. Let's get Dad to come down. Dad meaning God the Father, who lives back at home on their planet. Now, their planet comes through our solar system. It's an interloper, or whatever you want to call it. It comes in and interferes with us. It crosses right on just outside the asteroid belt and goes back on out into deep space. And when it enters, it'll be just outside of Mars and, you know, in the asteroid belt and goes back out into deep space. It's very elongated. We're orbiting the sun pretty much in a circle. They've got a very long, long orbit. It takes 3,600 of our years for their planet to come around one orbit. They age 1 year. We age 3,600 years. To us, they're immortal. their God. Therefore, for the first time, the idea of God comes to earth. And the reason that idea is there is because they get tired of mining gold, and they get tired of digging the canals up here in the Eden. They get tired of all this heavy work in the farming, in the crops, and manufacturing clothes, everything needed to run several cities. I mean, you're talking a million cows in pens just in Ur. And you can read the text and go to Ur. There's a million cows there that feed these guys, as well as the mixed breeds, as well as the earthlings. Now, an earthling standing somewhere between 5 feet, maybe even 6 feet, let's go aside, but around 4 to 5, but we'll call it 6. The king, the giant mixed breed, the Nephilim, who are the children of the gods who came down, who were the heroes of old, men of renown, therefore they're the first kings, first high priests, that kind of stuff. They say kingship was lowered down to earth by Enlil. He brought authority of kingship to the mixed breeds, and then he started placing them in positions of authority, and earthlings will take their directives of the gods through the middleman. Now, it works just the opposite. Earthlings don't do well. Punishment comes through the middleman. Unless it's maybe the king that's not doing well, the punishment will come from God. And they don't mess around, as you can imagine. They want it their way. So, as you see these maps, you're seeing this area called the Eden between the rivers is developing and developing and developing. All the time, they're getting the gold. What do they do with the gold after Nippur or close to it? They're smelting it. They're waiting for a full load, and then they'll blast off earth carrying pure gold, the lightest way to do it, and blast off, and they will travel just the shortest distance really they can that would plant them at a way station. Now, the perfect way station would be Mars, which is so close to their planet when it finally comes crossing through our solar system. If you see a plus sign, you're seeing the symbol of their planet. It's the planet that crosses over. If you see a planet with wings, it's a symbol of their planet. It's the planet that flies by. I mean, you'd have to go to Nibiru and look at that page, and you'll see what I'm talking about, and you'll see a lot about what I'm talking about. I recommend that page. Anyway, as we talk about Nippur, here they are. They're colonizing. They're establishing not only their housing, but the entire shebang for their mixed breeds and for their earthlings to take over all the chores. As a matter of fact, what they did is Enki got so mad that his people were still in the mines that he started looking for replacement workers from the animals. And he started he knows DNA, his son knows DNA. So they start playing with the animals, Enki does, trying to find a worker. You know, half lion, half Anunnaki, or half lion, half snake, whatever. All these weird things that you are in the myths, these impure beings on earth that were not allowed onto the Noah's Ark because they were impure. These weird animals that cannot reproduce anyway, contraptions, they just exist now running around because they were failed experiments. And there's a few of them. So then he finally finds this thing up on its feet. And walking 2 feet is Homo erectus. And he's going, wow, right here in Africa, we've got our answer. So at his place, if you look at the map, look for Eridu, down very close to the Persian Gulf. And his place, he and his sister, Nen Herzog, got together, and they started working DNA on this Homo erectus. They need workers or relief somehow, anyway, somehow. Enlil denies, king up in heaven denies. They're stuck. And we're talking thousands of years here, which to them may not be thousands of years, but still, that's a long time. Okay? Excuse me. I get dry. I'm sorry. So anyway, they revolt. That got them nowhere. Enlil's hard at it with his sister. And it takes about 50,000 years, but in an evolutionary period of time, it's a blink of the eye, 50,000 years. But 50,000 years approximately, with many failure attempts, they finally get it. And yes, they did use clay to make the DNA of them and the Earthling bind. So they had, or not the Earthling, but the Homo erectus. So they started taking this and modifying it and bringing it up to date with their abilities. Bringing a frontal lobe, a voice box, your ability to choose, your ability to think and reason. Your ability to decide if you're going to do the job because you can understand the language. You can't read, but you can understand the language. And there's only one language in that whole area, okay? The first language on Earth and the only language on Earth. And in writing form, it's cuneiform, the first written language on Earth. All the first everything is coming right out of between those rivers. I don't care what it is. It started right there. And everything they did, man now copies. Because man learned it from them right there. We had no idea how to farm till they taught us. We had no idea how to raise cows till they taught us. What do you do with sheep? That, for instance, came from their planet. They like sheep. They taught us. What do you do with the wolves? They taught us. And so on and so on and so on. And there are artifacts right here and texts right here that will give you who, what, when, and why. It's all here. Wow. Has man ever been looking for those answers? Honest to God, it's right here. So as we go through Nefer, you're going to see an actual aerial view of an ancient map of Nefer. How's that possible? In ancient, ancient, ancient Earth? How's that possible? And here's an excavation of Nefer. It's just, you know, drawings. And now we're getting to an artifact. There's a Nefer map. I'm not sure, just I think it's the city, and you can see there's just a few roads there. By the way, you do know, I hope, put your cursor on the slide. Slideshow stops, brief description pops up. If it's in your way, put your cursor on the other slide, and its brief description pops up. The one you're looking at does not, and now you got a few For instance, 1AB, move your cursor over here to the opposite of that, and now you can view 1AB without a description popping up. It's just a little tidbit. And you also have a fast forward to the right with an arrow and a fast rewind to the left. So as we go through this slideshow, there's maps. Here we go. Please go to Artifact 1D. 1D is what is known as, I guess, a tell. It looks like a mountain, but maybe it's not. And what gives you that tells you that it's not. Well, let's look closely. So when they did, and who's looking? During the mid-1800s, biblical archaeologists decided from Europe that they would go into this part of the world looking for the cities that were listed in the Torah, in the five books of Moses. And they felt, these are Christians, they felt that if they could find those cities, they could prove the Old Testament as being a historical document and factual. I mean, people are having trouble trying to understand it. They're trying to prove that it's factual and so on. So they go looking for the cities. And these archaeologists start to discover these tells. And then when they start to clean them off, they discover they're huge ziggurats. And they would call them temples. It's the house where the god lives, right? That's what it is. So on 1D, you're looking at the ruins of Enlil's house, the Earth Colony Commander's house. It's right there, and down below would be the city of Nippur, which isn't going to be very big because he doesn't like the Earthlings all that much and hates their noise. He didn't like his brother doing this, especially the mixed breeds. That's their DNA. What do they do with these guys? Not the plan. So these mixed breeds that are in power, they can reproduce. They make sure that they reproduce by keeping their DNA pure, not diluting. It's the same thing the royal gods do that came down to earth. We picked that custom up as well. So what happens? Please bear with me here. The first 10 generations from Adam down to Noah, they all married their sister. All of them. Now, if you don't have a sister, then marry your half-sister. That's the rule. If you don't have a half-sister, then you're going to marry your first cousin. If you don't have that, you're not going to have an heir. So the king has no heir if he doesn't have that. So the king would marry his sister, who is also a giant mixed breed, right? And when they have children, their children will be giant mixed breeds who are stronger, faster, smarter, and lives much longer than an earthling. As a matter of fact, they are responsible they have the authority for the responsibility of the earthling. The gods kind of shucked everything off onto man. And, you know, man's there doing the work. And in between sits their offspring, the Nephilim. And the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and the days after when the sons of God came down, had sex with the daughters of man, they had children by them. These children became the heroes of old, men of renown, the first kings. So you, when you go to, through these cities, you'll see the first kings, the giant mixed breeds. And they tried to pass their kingship on down through pure bloodlines. So, for instance, Noah, the tenth one, marries his first cousin, the Thanos or something like that. And, okay, all of them did. And what do you got? Methuselah living 1,000 years, Jared, and then there 1,000 years. And just look at Genesis. And the first 10 leaders, heroes, we'll call them kings, the first 10 Hebrew leaders from Adam on down married their sister. Or otherwise, forget an heir. So we move on from there. What do? They marry their own sister. And so what happens? The next 10 generations from Noah, and we're pretty much starting over here, the next 10 generations from Noah on down to Abraham married their sister, their half-sister then, and not, if not, their first cousin. For instance, Abraham married his sister, Sarah. They have all the benefits of the giant mixed breed. Sarah even gets pregnant at age 100. Abraham is real easy to spot as the Hebrew leader because he's so much taller, stronger, faster, smarter than they are. And then, of course, he'll live much longer than they will. You better obey the king, and he better obey the God. And so it went for thousands of years. By the way, on Artifact 1D, you see, plain and simple, this ruins, this very large ruins, and up on top is this structure. It's a reconstruction that the archaeologists did back in 1900. That is not part of that ziggurat. Boy, what a mess they did there, huh? So if you look at the slide next to 1D, opposite, is 1E. That is simply a drawing, a modern drawing, of what that looks like over there, buried in mud. Why would it be buried? And how could you bury such a thing way up there? How does dirt get way up there to bury that? Come on. Let's take a look here closely at what I'm going to show you. So there's a ziggurat. That's what it looks like, all cleaned up. Here's what it looks like as they start to excavate. And what do they find? Let's go to 1H. You got a good idea of the modern thing up on top. That's horrible. But archaeologists did that. So, and by the way, they call this temple Ekur, E-K-U-R. That's the name of Enlil's house, okay? That's called Command Central. Earth colony directed right there. So as we go through these, just to give you an example, 1K, you're looking at a foundation. Everything they discover, everything, including that huge mountain and the city below and everything else, is built out of mud bricks, about the size of your foot or maybe a little bigger. Mud bricks, you know, like Moses was doing and so forth, the Hebrews for the Egyptians. Taking straw and clay and making bricks. Well, these guys, this is no ordinary brick. Scientists calculated the crushing weight, what it takes, the pressure to crush a brick standing on straight up on its end. They figured you could stack them in the end from Earth to the moon, and these bricks would not crush. The weight of all that would not crush. These are bricks like we do not make at all. And for instance, everything you see here in Nippur is nothing but a ton of mud bricks. It can't be. We're talking millions of them. It's indeed the facts, and that's what happens from city-state to city-state for the entire civilization established on Earth by the gods, doing the work as man. And the gods, by the way, walk the earth with the mixed breeds. So when they say God walked with man, okay, he's walking the earth, but he's not going to walk with it. Well, I got to take that back. There are artifacts of a god with a giant mixed breed king and also earthlings. So you could really see the difference between one race versus the next versus the next. You got three different types of earthlings or humans right there. And by the way, we look just like them. They don't look like us. We were made in God's image. They fashioned that Homo sapien or Homo erectus into Homo sapien. It took the 50,000 years. The evolution followers call that the missing link. They cannot find any skeletons or anything for the period between Neanderthal and Homo sapien. And just overnight, Homo sapien shows up. So they went from caveman to these cities with these bricks and these gods and that organization from the cave overnight. Anybody believe in this, you better raise your hand and become embarrassed here. Because the only way that's possible is when alien technology came down and taught man, period. And it was alien technology that shaped, not created, shaped this being into way more advanced to where he's Homo sapien. And now the Homo sapien can understand the commands, has a voice back to feedback, and so on and so forth, has the strength, has the this, the knowledge, and the wherewithal. Everything works out beautifully. How fast can we reproduce? Okay. So out of the rib comes Eve, or the first female. That's out of the DNA of the first male comes the first female. Adam is married to his sister. What is his job? His job, by the way, since he is declared to be model man, not the worker, his job is to come to Enlil's Eden and stay in the Eden and reproduce as fast as he can. So he's cranking them out. The first one that comes out is, I believe, Cain. What happens to Cain? Well, he's grabbed by Enlil's son, Ninurta, and he's immediately taught how to farm. And they get rid of having to do that work, and they give it to Cain and all of his descendants. Okay? Then the next one was Abel. Well, they decide to give Abel to Dumuzi, who is doing the sheep herding and watching over cows. He's got the food supply, okay? And he feeds them and all this stuff. He's the shepherd. As a matter of fact, they call him Dumuzi the shepherd. That's a god I'm talking about, Enki's son. So Dumuzi the shepherd is there doing the work. And when the gods transferred that to man, it was Abel. Abel the shepherd, Cain the farmer. When they actually harvest the crop, they bring, the new shepherd brings his sheep, the new farmer brings his crop, and then Lil says, let's have a feast and a celebration, why not? So they all come to Nippur and watch what the earthlings did. Makes sense? What happens is, the whoa and the wheeze and wows go more towards the shepherd because they like lamb more than they like spinach. Okay. Cain takes that personally, kills Abel. What happens to Cain? That's a problem. They need him to reproduce and be the worker race. Not Adam. He's model man reproducing. He has 1,000 kids. Check out Genesis. And how long does he live? Who really knows? He's model man. Anyway, he's well taken care of by Enlil in the Eden, and everybody else is quick at work. And soon, all of these things are taken off of the back of the gods, and the yoke is handed to the back of man. Now, man is the worker race for the gods. Yes, you heard it. You're workers for the gods, and that relieves them. And you are, overnight, you're civilized. Well, somebody better take authority here and be a leader. And the natural leader, of course, is the mixed breed giant. So you got the earthling 5 feet, we'll call it 6. You've got the semi-divine mixed breed giant, semi-giant, demigod. So he's semi-everything, all right? He's around 10 feet. You got a 5-footer-ish, a 10-footer-ish, as a mixed breed, and then you have the god who is around 16 feet. There are many artifacts under Utu's page. You'll see Utu with his foot on an earthling crushing him, like we do maybe a spider. This is Utu crushing earthling after earthling just simply by stepping on him. There's a big difference here, and you'll see it in the artifacts. For thousands of years, these artifacts keep being made. And there are many cities to send the copies to because each artifact is a scene, a historical scene, of what happened here. So when you go to the God's pages, pay attention to those artifacts. That's where the story is. So anyway, as we go through this slideshow and the gods are established and the kingship has come down to earth and the earthlings are multiplying, things are cooking. Except there's all these creatures that Enki has, you know, created, and they are his creations. And they're still alive, and the earthlings are multiplying and driving Enlil nuts. Not only that, they're expanding into the forbidden zone, as far as he's concerned, and that is the Lebanese cedar trees. The Lebanese mountains full of cedar. Well, those ziggurats, that's mud brick. But inside, at cedar. Why? They love the scent of cedar. Now, this is open air. We're not talking air conditioning here. So the scent of cedar in that breeze through the ziggurat is a good thing, they feel. They like it. So they preserve the sacred forest, cedar forest, in Lebanon. Now, the very artifact, that's 1M. Artifact 1M, the description says, shipping cedars from Lebanon mountains to Enlil's temple construction site. They love the fragrance of cedar. So as they go into these temples, they're finding some of it's wood, yeah. Okay, so the gods obviously taught man how to work with wood and everything else. Now you're starting to see some aerial views of just really how badly it was buried. It's not an easy thing finding these, and I'm sure they haven't got them all yet. Who knows? I'm sure they don't. So you've got various pictures of this site in different stages of excavation. And they're going, wow, mud bricks? This kind of mud brick like we can't make? Wow, lasted thousands of years and didn't crush? Wow, and then they go on, and they're discovering things that maybe ain't just quite right with the Old Testament. They discover thousands of clay tablet texts. The first written language on earth is, you take a stylus, and then you take a wet clay, and you make shape whatever size text you're going to work with. And you use the stylus and write your text. Now, who can do that? The man just pick up his stylus and do that way back when on his own? Oh, man. So, obviously, man's being taught. You can't go from caveman to advanced civilization overnight. And you can't become that type of advanced man where he's now Homo sapiens sapiens. It continues to be upgraded, modified, advanced. Who advances him? DNA from the gods. That's what started you. That's what advances you. And they do care about you, or you'd be gone. As a matter of fact, Enlil, whose decisions cannot be disputed, decided he had had enough. This is Enlil's command center. He decided he had enough with the Earthlings, Enki's creation, and with the mixed breeds, Enki's great started with Enki's having sex with the daughters of man. Now Enlil even has sex with the daughters of man. I had enough of that too. Enlil also, because these things did not exist, Enlil also had enough of these creatures, these failed experiments. They're still living. He had enough of all these freaks and all these crossbreeds and all these different races of them that do not and should not exist. So what does he do? He calls a meeting with the gods and tells them all, give me a pinky swear that you're not going to tell anybody, no mixed breeds, no earthlings, of what we're going to do. Okay. Everybody swears. He's going to create a tidal wave, a flood, that will wipe all of them out. And then they'll clean up the mess and start over with the gold and the smelting. And they send it to Mars. They built the warehouses there. Enki Sun started it. You'll see it, artifacts on Mars, whether you want to believe it or not. The ziggurats for the houses, warehouses for the gold and whatever else is going that way. So 3,600 years go by, the space truckers of about 300 stationed on Mars and constantly going between Earth and their home planet and back. So you got about 300 as space truckers, 300 in the Garden of Eden, and 300 in the mines. Well, the Eden and the mines have been handed over to the worker earthlings, but not the truckers. So the truckers come down, they have sex with the daughters, man, take any of them they want as a wife, and have more mixed breeds. Oh, God, is that enough? Enough. He wants every one of them dead. Now, this is nothing new for them because they killed off all the dinosaurs. So it's safe for them to come down. All of this starts to make sense. Anyway, here sits Enlil making the big decisions. No, you already got the promises, and no one can change his command. His older brother, the smartest one on Earth, but not the heir to the king. Why? He didn't. Enlil is a product of the king and the king's sister. Therefore, even though Enlil is much younger than Enki, and Enki is much wiser, Enlil is born of two strands of the king, the double seed. Therefore, he becomes the crown prince under their law of kingship succession. It's the double seed law of succession. Well, our mixed breeds, our leaders of old, do the exact same thing. So you've got this practice going. Every practice they have, eventually us or through religion, we're doing the same thing. We learned it from them. So here is Enlil. He's sick of it. He throws a tidal wave, several of them, against the earth, and all of a sudden you got seawater into fresh water, you got a dead sea, you got this and that, all from this Noah's flood. One problem. Enki broke the promise. Enki has an actual son sitting there in Enlil's wife's city, which is Shurippak. You can go to Shurippak and you'll see slides there. That is Enlil's wife's patron city. Of course, they're together, but they each have their ziggurat, they each have their authority, they each have their patron city. So there sits this guy who is a direct descendant of Enki because he had sex with his mother. Enki had sex with everyone. Every Anunnaki female for sure. And quite a few of these too. So anyway, brother's mad about this. Everybody keeps having sex with them. They did not bring women for these Anunnaki. They put 300 men, approximately, in the mines. They put 300 men, approximately, in the Garden of Eden. And with them would be a few of the females who are direct descendants of the king. So the only females there are the king's descendants, like his daughters, okay? That's it. He's got two daughters here and some others. The king has many, many sons and daughters, but there's only one heir of the double seed, and everybody else is through a concubine. You've got the official wife, and then you got the one you love, right? Every king did that. And by the way, the Hebrews did that. So any way you look at it, Endless Piss, they gotta go. Enki gets with his son, Ningasita, who helped him, and his sister, I guess, comes in, but it's mainly Enki and his son. They decide, why don't we save this guy called Noah? They call him Zuasadra. Why don't we save him and everything else here while we're at it? My God, Enlil, because he's crazy with authority, he wants everything dead. We spent a long time getting out of those mines. We're finally out of them, and goddammit, we ain't going back. My younger brother isn't pushing this on us. Not again. So, he's going to kill them all. I'm going to save them. So he takes his son, Noah, who seems to be a little different. He has a glow about him, and he looks, we would call that like an albino. Anyway, here's Noah, and he's been given a water clock. And if you go to Shurabak, you will see all this. Or you can go to Enki and see this. Or probably, I think you can go to Ningasita and see this. So in Shurabak, anyway, Ningasita, the snake god, and Enki, the father to this guy, he's father both to Ningasita and to Noah. That makes Noah a relative of Ningasita as well. Half something or other, okay? So they have an interest in each other, period. We're going to work with him and save him and his family and maybe a couple closest friends. We're going to save humanity. And maybe let's save the tigers and lions and elephants. I mean, my goodness, Earth is loaded with life. Mike, we're not going to let him to kill it all. We're going to save everything, seeds, everything. So, and then we're going to create an ark to put it on. So when his tidal waves, this ark is going under the tidal wave, the only place it's safe. You don't ride a tidal wave, you get under it. So this ark isn't floating around in a tidal wave or a rainstorm. It sees tidal wave after tidal wave. It's under it. And what's it carrying? You will see that Enki defied Enlil totally and brought with him nothing impure, as the Bible would say, the Torah. Nothing impure is allowed on the ark. What does impure mean? That means a strange mixture that cannot reproduce. That's not a natural creature. Don't bring that on board. So they're not going to preserve what really shouldn't be, but they will preserve the natural things on Earth. How do they do that and put it on a boat? And how do they build a boat without everybody thinking you're nuts? Look, I'm sure about it. You're going to see a soil. This boat isn't in the water. It's on land. This guy's nuts. Enki and Ningasita and him work it all out. They work everything out. Enki would talk loud to his son about a flood and so forth, and he would have Noah stand behind a reed wall and listen to everything. Enki did not tell the earthling about anything. He told his son. And his other son happened to overhear him, so Enlil knows, or Noah knows, to build the boat. And he'll get help because he doesn't know, and to collect the life on Earth. But it's not the life on Earth. They they couldn't put two of everything in there, and there's no way two of everything would sit still with the guy, the animal next to you. They eat each other every day. You do need animals that you're going to eat while you're on the water. So you might bring some sheep and some things like that for your survival. And then when you land, what are you going to eat? So absolutely, there are live animals being brought. Whatever they need to get started again, they brought. But the rest of them, they don't need a lion, but they want to preserve it. So how did they do it? They did it by taking the life essence. We would call that today the egg and the sperm, or just simply a fertilized egg of every species. Put it in a petri dish, put it on the ship. You got all the space in the world. You can maintain that life essence for as long as you want. So do you want to delay in bringing this predator beast before this rabbit shows up? Or they've got it all controlled. So they save all this life, and the life they don't want to save, the unclean, they do not. Just as you see there. And there is this number 40, 40 days, 40 nights. You're going to see it all through the Bible, because 40 is the number of Enki, the one who fashioned man. That's his number. If you see the assembly of the gods, you'll see 40 is Enki's number. 40 becomes important. Kind of one of those sacred numbers like 12. So in the Bible, you're going to see 40 days and 40 nights with Noah. You might see 40 days and 40 nights in the desert with Jesus. And so on, and so on, and so on. And then, using the number 12, you might find the Momo. Go find the Momo. It's on the right side column, near the top. Scroll down till you see Momo, M-U-L, M-U-L. When you click on that, you'll see just some of the things the gods and man did with the number 12. 12 pointed stars represents this, and you have the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 parts to the high priest of the Hebrews on their breastplate, which is magical, and somehow this is kind of helps them work with the Ark of the Covenant. But anyway, there's 12 stones on this breastplate of the high priest, okay? And 12 this and 12 that. There's a list, a sum of it. 12 apostles, right? The 12th imam for the Islam, right? 144,000 saved by the Christians, right? 360 degrees in a circle, right? And so on and so on. And look for the Momo, you see what I'm talking about. And you get into sacred numbers, and that too is a book of Moses. Numbers. There's all of this relates to these gods and our solar system and how they relate to our solar system. So let's look down here below the one slideshow, and you've got Nipper quotes and these things. Here's a text, Pavlov's Journey to Nibiru. Well, this is Ninurta, Enlil's son, going to his daddy's place. Basically, Nibiru, which is somewhat named after their planet, Nibiru. Anyway, the return of Ninurta to Nippur again, and the son going home to see his father in Earth Colony Command Central, Nippur. So one star's, and here's a two star where Endel's son Nanner does the same thing, and Ikur is the name of his temple, his house. And then another one star, the history of the Tomal, that's his wife's portion of the ziggurat. And then you get another one star from Ishmi Dagon, that's your giant mixed breed king, Enlil's giant semi-divine mixed breed descendant. This comes from Enlil's seed, comes Ishmi Dagon. And there are others. And then you get something kind of interesting. It's a two-star. It's the Lament for Nippur. And what you're talking about is pain and agony over the suffering of Enlil's people. What? It's a two-star. You get a little more information there. But you'll get a lot more information if you go to Ur or Uruk and read those laments. The Lament of Urim, which is Ur, and Sumer is a pretty good text. Might be a three-star. And you'll find that on Ur or Uruk page, because there's also the Lament of Uruk. These laments, if you read them closely, you'll discover that they use nuclear weapons against one of these gods. Enlil's descendants nuked Enki's descendants. One of Enki's descendants, Marty, decided his dad was screwed. He should be the crown prince. And that would make him, of course, in line to be king as number four or three position instead of his cousin Ninurta. So they start going to war, cousin against cousin, because Marduk wants to claim supremacy of Earth Colony, not Enlil. Let it be Enki who will give it to Marduk. So Marduk pushes it and pushes it, and Marduk decides that he's going to have his civilians do more than other civilians. So he would have the advanced city-state of Babylon, and then later the advanced nation of Egypt. All of that is under Marduk. Now, as we look at Nippur and we go through some of this slideshow, you're going to see a lot of things that look like antennas. What are antennas doing in ancient Sumer, the very first cities on Earth? Why would they have these artifacts that depict these things? For instance, very interesting, an artifact 3J. Simply, it's a stone that had been smoothed and shaped into a cylinder and about the size of your hand or smaller. That cylinder, they would reverse carve the scene that they want to preserve as a historical scene for all time. So someone reverse carves on this stone that they already fashioned smooth, and here comes this scene in the negative on this little stone that you got to turn around while you carve it. You think caveman can do such a thing or even think of a negative image and what to do with it? So anyway, here are thousands upon thousands of these cylinder seals is what they call them. And they're small cylinders, smooth cylinder stones. What you do is you take that negative and roll it on the wet clay, just like they use to make their text, their written language. You would roll this scene onto the wet clay, and up comes the positive. And there's the scene that they're preserving for historical posture for all time. And these are the artifacts you never get to see. For instance, 3J, you're looking at a god, a goddess, and possibly antennas, and above that is a flying disc. Remove the wings, and you've got a saucer from which they came down from. Saucers. Flying saucers. On ancient Sumer, when man just came out of the cave. Flying saucers. You also see 8-pointed stars with different things between the points. You see things that look like rockets. You see other figures that are the gods as well in another scene. So you have scenes within scenes. And there's a lot going on with symbols. You think man did that? Is your ego so big that only man is here? There is no life other than man, and man is the smartest of everything, and he's on top of the food chain, and Earth is it, period. And the whole universe evolves around Earth, because that's what the Pope told you. The Masons might tell you something different, but the Pope is telling you the Earth is flat, and the entire universe rotates around Earth, including the sun. A guy named Copernicus comes along, and he says, that's not true. These planets are orbiting the sun like all planets do. And they are orbiting in an orderly form and fashion. So they are fixed in their orbits, and they are regular. They can be measured and so on and so forth. And each orbit has a different clock, but nobody's on there, and Earthlings are not there. So here comes the aging of our clock and the aging of their clock, and we're going, that's God. And here comes God with all this technology. Man has no understanding. We just came out of the cave, and we have no understanding what civilization is until we're placed there, and we have no understanding of what these things that stick up weird. They look like antennas to us. That's called a communication network between the gods who came down. Also, since Enlil is Earth's colony command central, don't you think he would have communications set up between he and his father, God the Father in heaven, on their planet Nibiru? So that's going to take satellite communications to do that. Here you're talking about internal communications on Earth. We got two kinds of communications going on, but we just came out of the damn cave. Come on. So let's go to Artifact 3L. Artifact 3L, you're going to see Enlil sitting there on the left. And you're going to see, I would say that's Nin Herzog sitting there on the right. That's a brother and a half-sister. That brother has sex with Nin Herzog, Enlil, and they produce an heir of the double seed. Enlil is a direct descendant of the king, Anu, and the king Anu's sister. He's got the double seed. He's the prince the crown prince. The girl over here is the descendant of King Anu also, but a different mother. He has sex with her half-sister to produce an heir. And so Ninurta is born. Well, this upsets Enki's heir, Marduk. And Marduk and Ninurta become bitter enemies. And then, of course, Ninurta has brothers and sisters and others who join him against Marduk, who has sons and so forth, who join him against Enlil. And we got a mess, gods against gods. Some of these wars you can find in the ancient Hindu texts in India called the Vedas. They'll tell you about aliens and sky wars. Anyway, they got a satellite system set up for communication back home. And here comes some artifacts. Four is a kind of an ugly artifact of possibly man-carved. Big difference here. An artifact of Enlil sitting on his throne in Command Central. The next artifact, number 4A, you've got Ninurta leading the giant mixed-breed King Ernamu going up to Ninurta's father's house, who is Enlil, and they're going to repair some damage. They got the tools. There's an earthling to help with the labor and carry the water. And somebody's got to carry the water. Very important. And very unimportant job. Earthling, very unimportant job. King, direct orders from the god. There you go. So the city will probably help the king modify or repair Enlil's house. That's an important artifact. You're looking at three different species of humans. All different sizes. And so let's go on. The next artifact is 4B. A king can also be a high priest, and a high priest, who's the butler to the god, practically living, if not living, in that house that the god lives in. Man, you talk about being close to God. Well, you're still a mixed breed. You're part earthling. And you might carry lice or disease or whatever, so you don't see any hair on the high priest. And sometimes the high priest is also the king. So here are a few statues of kings that were at one time high priests, because they're skinheads, as well as they're carrying the basket of abundance. Okay? Very important kings, descendants of the gods, leaders over the earthlings, statues, artifacts. King Ernamu, very important. Go to Ur page and you'll see the kings of Ur. Go to the cities and see the kings. Go to the cities and see the artifacts found in these cities. To give you an idea, just an idea, when these archaeologists discovered Nineveh, I don't know if you remember the tale, but Jonah was swallowed by a whale and spit out on the shores of Nineveh because God told him to preach this to those wackos believing in pagan gods in Nineveh. He's going, I don't want to go. So they have a whale swallow him. Maybe they put him in a submersible submarine, you know, and carry him via water over to Nineveh, drop him off. Well, they found that city. Boy, they're excited. And when they start to excavate, they find tens of thousands of texts organized like it's a library. Huh? Pretty good for caveman. Near caveman. And then they find tens of thousands of artifacts. Huh? Nineveh all of a sudden is a very big shocker. And so it goes with every one of these tells that they uncover. Takes a while to do that. And who in the world buried him in this mud? Way up there? Mud doesn't go way up there. But nobody asks that question, I guess. We don't want to know, right? And the powers don't want you to know. Well, this website, I want you to know what your history truly is. It's been hidden for 2,500 years from us. We are advanced enough to know what it is and translate it. Let's bring it forward. No, it's hidden. Who's hiding them? Museums. Well, who runs the museums? Masons. Who else is hiding them? Governments. Who else? Colleges. Which colleges? Elite colleges. Oxford, Yale, Princeton. If you go to my texts and look where I'm getting them, many of these translations are from Oxford, Yale, UPenn, elite colleges. They have these artifacts. They have some of these texts, and it's spread out from Russia to Brazil. Now, let's say you got a text that's six of these rocks together equals one text, okay? Well, let's take one of these rock artifacts and put it in New York, and we'll put one in Paris, and we'll put one in Brazil, and we'll put one in Baghdad, and maybe one over there in Kiev. You see what I'm saying? And you put it together, huh? You'll never understand this stuff. We have it hidden from you. We have it in a dead language you'll never know about. The Joe Blow will not do these translations. He isn't even going to see these things. And when it comes to the carvings of three different types of humans, you'll never see that. And for instance, 5B is a Nipper artifact listing the kings prior to Noah's flood. Have you ever seen any history before the flood? Any written history? And who the hell could write it? Right there is a list of kings you have never heard and how long they reigned. Therefore, I strongly urge you on just about every page of these city-states, there is a text called the Sumerian Kings List. Okay? And in the Sumerian Kings List, you are going to see the actual list of kings, who they are, how long they reigned, and where they reigned. These are the actual heroes of old, men of renown, the Nephilim, period. The very first Nephilim, the very first advanced earthlings, the very first mashed potatoes and french fries, the very first figs eaten, the very first. Okay? Never had wool clothes, never did. It's the very first. And you can thank Enlil in bringing down kingship to Earth Colony to organize the earthlings and take care of the God's demands and directions. So now we start looking at texts, and you see one star, two star, one star, okay? Not a whole lot. The Lament for Nepper is a two star. And there you have it. What you're looking at is Earth Colony Command Central. That's not there for the Earthlings. That's there for the most important of the gods who came down. That's it. So as you would go through this, you have to keep in mind, as you go through Enlil's page, you have to keep this in mind. And when you do, you're going to see the God who wanted the Earthlings to disappear, and somehow the same God in the Torah wants Earthlings saved. Huh? Should we kill them all? Should we save some and start anew? Doesn't make any sense. And you'll see that time and time in the Bible, because the Bible is the shortest short story of history there ever is. For instance, in Genesis, Methuselah lived 1,000 years, okay? He had so-and-so as an heir, Lamech, I think, and he had so many hundred or thousand other kids, because he lived a long time, and passed on. That's it. 1,000 years, and that's all you got to say about it? That's horrible. But nobody thinks of it that way. Where is the details on 1,000 years? And who can write these details? So it's all discovered right here where it all began in Mesopotamia. And Mesopotamia was totally under the control of Enlil, the Greek god Zeus. Okay, Enki, the Greek god Poseidon, is by far the smarter, wisest, and most useful. It is he who brought ye about. So in my prayers, believe it or not, now I'm praying to Jesus, believe it or not, and you should to yours, sits Enki and Herzog. They should be included, but you'll never know who they are. Go to their pages and see what no one will show you but this website. This is bringing to you what has never before allowed you to see. It's a dangerous thing and an important thing for you to consume. So thank you very much for coming. You see, I do appreciate it. That's a lot of work here. Took 24 years of work here and a lot of study. So I ask simply, I hope you liked it, and will you come back and look at more? There's so much. All the answers to the mysteries, if you're interested, is here. All the hidden truth is here. How that affects you today is here. Where you come from, what you learn, who taught you, everything is right on this website. So if you have the time and you are interested, you hit the jackpot. Bingo, please come back. Otherwise, forget you ever saw any of this. I'm sorry. You should not be on this website. I'm sorry. Please accept my apologies. No reason to come back. This knowledge isn't for everybody, and it was never meant for you. I say bullshit. thank you for coming once again. I really enjoyed seeing that you are coming and from around the world. Really important information here. I really appreciate it. Please come back. Thank you.